Just wanted to let you know that we are taping this session, and it will be available on our website, boardoptions.com, probably within the next 4 or 5 days. I'm pleased to have Lisa Haddad and Stuart Cable as our guests. Lisa is a partner at Goodwin Procter, and her specialization is corporate law. She's known for her work in governance and mergers and acquisitions. She received her JD from Harvard Law and her BA from the University of Mass in Amherst. Stu Cable is also a partner at Goodwin Procter. He is an outside general counsel for public and private companies. The industries he works in includes technology, software, life sciences, professional and business services, alternative energies, and financial services. Stu represents private equity and venture sources, and he serves as chair of the Goodwin Procter Corporate Department. He was chair of the hiring committee and a member of the executive committee. Stu currently chairs the firm's incubator initiative and leads the firm's initiative in expanding into Asia. Stu serves as a member of the President's Leadership Council at Dartmouth College. He's chairman emeritus of the Buckingham Brown and Nichols School, and he serves as a member of the Board of Fellows of the Harvard Medical School. Stu lectures in corporate governance, mergers and acquisitions at MIT Sloan Management School, Tuck School of Business, the Institute for Outstanding Directors, and he is responsible for directing Goodwin's annual Directors Forum. Stu receives his JD at Columbia University Law School, his MBA from Tuck, and his BA from Dartmouth College. So.
We're honored to be here today. Let me kind of give you guys a preview of coming attractions. Lisa and I do a lot of board education. You know, our day job is buying and selling companies. I sold the company that George worked for 5 years ago, and we do it for private companies, we do it for public companies, and that's our day job. That's what we get paid for. But our passion, our avocation, and what we do in our spare time is board education. We do that with custom programs for major technology and life sciences companies all over the country, where boards come to us and say, Stuart, will you teach us about X? Will you teach us about Y? We do it at Goodwin Procter's annual forum. You're all invited, May 21st this year in downtown Boston. And we pick different programs, different years. We bring in 100 independent directors from our client companies, and we teach them what it is to be a director. Larry was kind enough to invite me to a program of this sort a couple years ago, and as I recall, we did a program in the M&A world called Confessions of an Interloper, where we had a deal and somebody tried to break the deal up, and we did a little teach-in on that subject. Lisa is my partner in crime. We do these programs together all over the country, and the program we're going to put on for you today is one that we've given in a private boardroom, and we've also given to a larger audience in the past. It actually came out of input we received at the end of one of our directors' conferences, where a director came up to us and said, you know, the hardest problem we have as independent directors is trying to figure out what our role is in strategic planning. So, you know, put all the day-to-day kind of audit committee crap and compensation committee business that the SEC requires, if you put it all to the side, and let's also put aside the one-off transactions, you know, where fiduciary duty is implicated because you're selling the company. Those are all fine and dandy, but what we really need help, Stuart, in thinking about is how do we help the CEO realize on his or her strategic vision for the company? Is it our job to design the strategic plan? Is it our job to rubber stamp the strategic plan? How do we monitor the strategic plan? And so we thought about that for a bit, and we concluded that we can't really teach to that by reference to buzzwords and business school principles. We think the best way to teach to that difficult problem, which is a business problem, a psychological problem, governance problem, is to experience it. So what we're going to do with you today in the next 45 minutes is we're going to run you through three fact patterns. We're going to take three real companies that Lisa and I know inside out because we've studied them. We've studied everything that's publicly available about these three companies. And we're going to do a little role playing. So Lisa will play the role of CEO of each of these companies. I will read you for each of these companies, one at a time, a fact pattern, the case study. And then you, the board of directors, will hear a presentation from Lisa about her strategic plan for this company, given that fact pattern. And what I'd ask you to do is pretend you're the directors and have a conversation among yourselves and with the CEO about what you think of her strategic plan. And what we may do, depending upon how the conversation goes, is we may go into executive session. So I may go like this, and we're going to pretend Lisa's outside of the room and we're in executive session. And guess what? That may sound a little hokey, but that's the real world. That's the real world of public companies today. The real world of public companies today is the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ both require that public company boards meet in executive session on a periodic basis. So we are going to go into executive session on a periodic basis. Excuse my little theater. We're going to do a little role play. Hopefully you'll find it instructive. And away we go. Right. So fact pattern one, and this is in writing if you'd rather read it than listen to me.
Page three.
I'm going to read you about the Wide World of Widgets company. Wide World of Widgets is a leading widget company, both in the United States and abroad. The company operates through a network of owned and franchised stores located in the United States and numerous international markets. In addition, the company has a vertically integrated manufacturing and supply chain system that enhances the quality and consistency of its product and leverages economies of scale. Strong brand recognition. During the past year, domestic sales grew by 4%. International sales grew by 7%. In fact, the company has posted same-store sales growth for the past 18 years. Earnings per share for the past year increased by double digits in comparison to the prior year. The company is leveraged primarily as a result of a prior recapitalization. Historically, a large portion of the company's cash flow from operations has been used to make payments on this debt, as well as distributions to shareholders in the form of stock repurchases. So it's a great business. It's a retail business. It's a steady-as-she-goes business. It's a year-over-year growth story. No big problems, right? Let's hear from the CEO about strategic plan, and after she's laid it out, you guys tell her what you think.
Okay, if you flip to page four, the next item on our agenda is a review of this year's strategic plan. So, fellow directors, let me start by saying that it's obviously been another great year for our company, and it's apparent to me that what we've been doing is not only the correct strategy, but that our management team has been effectively implementing the strategy. This strategy centers around our mission statement, exceptional franchisees and team members on a mission to be the best widget company in the world. We do this through the selection, development, and retention of exceptional team members and franchisees, a strong infrastructure to support our stores, and excellent store operations to create loyal customers. We'll keep moving forward in 2013 to execute on this mission. So I included our 2013 budget in your pre-read materials. As you saw, the budget targets sales growth for the current year of 3% domestically and 6% internationally, which are the top end of our long-term sales targets of 1-3% domestically and 3-6% internationally. I believe that these targets are achievable in the current environment and thus provide reasonable guidance for investors. As you know, we've built credibility with the street, and the last thing that I want to do is to provide earnings guidance that we are unable to beat. We will set management performance goals at 100% of these growth targets. To facilitate this growth, I'm requesting a capital expenditure budget of $25 to $35 million, which is roughly in line with last year's budget. In addition, we plan to leverage our strong brand recognition and reputation as a leader in widgets through the launch of a new advertising campaign that will include the use of digital marketing and social media. As you know, we've received awards for our innovative advertising campaigns in the past, including the last one starring me, and I believe that we should continue to tap into these new technologies to access our customers. Finally, I'm asking the board to increase the authorization under our open market share repurchase program. Returning money to shareholders is always a good thing in my book. We currently have $100 million remaining under the program, so let's say you double it to $200 million. That should provide me with enough capital for this purpose. Now, as you know, we still have some committee meetings to get to later this afternoon before we head out to dinner. So I'd like to entertain a motion to approve the strategic plan as presented at this meeting.
So before you guys open up on my CEO, I'd like to share a few additional facts with you. These are facts that she didn't tell you, and they're on page 5 of our hypothetical. First, there is a concern among investors that the company will have trouble sustaining the growth in the years ahead. The analyst community projects the stock will remain flat for the next 12 months. The company does not pay a dividend, and the predicted performance would mean little or no gain in 2013 for the stockholders. The widget industry is highly competitive. In fact, one of its largest competitors, Golden Widgets, had a great year in 2012, with the stock price appreciating 50% and its stock being heralded as the hottest in the industry. On the compensation front, compensation is used performance-based bonus and equity plans to incentivize management. Over the past 3 years, the company's achievement of the performance metric of adjusted income has been 100%, 183%, and 136%. So, we're back in session. Lisa's asked you for a motion to approve her budget and capital plan for the next year. The floor is open.
Why is Golden Widgets doing so much better than you guys in terms of same-store sales and store openings?
I think there's a couple reasons for that. One is they just have a great advertising campaign and a huge budget. That's partly why I'm asking for more money on that front. They've also done a good job internationally, and we're going to try to have to really compete internationally. I also think that one of the reasons for their success is they've gone to a bit of a more, they've really tapped into the market of the health conscious consumer, and so we're going to kind of move in that direction as well, and that will be part of our overall advertising campaign.
Is she soliciting your input, or is she seeking your approval?
Approval.
You think that's appropriate, inappropriate? What do you think? How should a board work?
So Lisa.
Yes.
Lisa?
Yes.
Okay. Golden Widgets, as my counterpart just mentioned, obviously they penetrated the market significantly last year. What barriers to entry have we supported so that we don't continue to see our business go elsewhere?
Well, it's not necessarily that our business is going elsewhere. You know, consumers do have a choice between different things, and there's often times where, you know, they could walk down the street to Golden Widgets, they could walk down the street to one of our franchisees. I do think we have to keep empowering our franchisees, especially on the international front, so that we're really getting out there in the market. You know, yeah, we have competition, and yeah, Golden Widgets has had a good year, but I think we really need to kind of focus on what our company needs and what our shareholders need at this point, and I think my strategic plan gets us there.
What's the niche?
What's the niche?
What is the significant difference between the two businesses?
Trying not to give away what our business is. I would say the significant difference is that it's a personal preference, and I think we need to get consumers to think about our business first when they're thinking about purchasing this particular product. That's why I think the advertising campaign is very important. We have a really strong brand recognition. Golden Widgets has a really strong brand recognition, so we are chipping away at that. And it'll take a little time, but as you've seen, we've grown every year, and I expect that, you know, steady growth to continue.
So what are we promoting in our advertising specifically that will make us unique? If they're promoting health and fitness and well-being, what's our strategy?
Our strategy is really going to be to tap into the younger market through social media, YouTube, digital marketing campaigns. We're also really going to be focused on the fact that we've improved our product over the last couple of years and that we've taken into account what our consumers have told us. And so I think all of that's going to help our brand recognition. You know, the commercials are going to make people laugh. I think that's going to make people remember us and help us chip away at Golden Widget. You know, we have some health conscious alternatives, but you know, that's not our main thing. That's not their main thing either, but we're certainly looking into that so we can compete on that front too.
Lisa, according to the background information, the business is slowing down there. Your projection at the upper end is 3% for domestic sales growth, 6% international, whereas last year it was 4% domestic, 7% international. And we are of the impression that investors believe that sustaining growth is going to be a bigger challenge. And so I'm puzzled that we have an improved product. We have identified a new target market that you will access through digital media. But it seems to be, is the analyst community not bought into the plan, or is there more going on that we should know about?
I don't think the analyst community is giving us credit for all the things we're doing. You know, part of the reason that our growth has, we're still growing, but maybe growing at a declining rate, is really just a function of the economy. Our product is something that people use, you know, their discretionary income to purchase. People don't have as much discretionary income these days, or they're being more mindful of how they spend it. So I think actually the fact that we're growing at all in the current economy and that our product is really a discretionary type product is, I think that's great. I mean, I think our management team's growing great.
So Norm Corn, you're not only a director, you're actually the general partner of a hedge fund that owns a major stake in this company. What do you think of her performance from a stockholder return perspective? What would you like to see done differently?
Well, one of the things I keyed in on is the fact that in the past 3 years, management has set revenue targets and then easily beat them. And I'm really concerned when I look at that you're not stretching. You know, if you hit, you're saying on the one hand that revenue growth this coming year is projected to be down from last year, and yet you're setting your reward system for your team at a sort of a gimme level where they can making it easy to beat that, since you've exceeded those modest targets in the past 3 years. So I'm not really pleased with the results, and I see this growing competitive threat. What I haven't heard is just how, is this a commodity product? Is if the only way you're going to distinguish yourselves is by entertaining ads and some new advertising channels, social media, that may or may not be sufficient to slide, you know, to increase your growth rate vis-a-vis the competition. So I'd really like to see a competitive analysis of product features and benefits and what your demographic composition of your marketplace is, who you expect to see the growth from. It's not just geography. You know, France is a country, but it's the demographics within the country that I'd like to understand.
Well, we've looked at all of that, obviously, in putting our plan together, and we could share that with the board, but at some point, I sort of feel like you're micromanaging me a bit, right? I mean, you really want me to show you the demographics in all the various places?
Well, when you describe a strategic plan, we think it's really important that we understand who you're selling to, what are the product attributes that the target audience is going to benefit, and so, no, I don't consider it micromanaging. I consider it a vital part of the direction.
Well, I'll tell you that, you know, we think international is where we're really going to have a growth opportunity because we aren't in all of the places we could be internationally, and so we're really trying to focus on that area, and you see that there's higher long-term growth rates for that area. So we, you know, we've looked at demographics.
Is your capital budget sufficient to support that?
Well, if you approve what I'm asking for, yeah, the 25-35 billion, yeah. I think
how many countries does that get you into?
Well, right now, we're trying to expand in the countries that we're in. We're looking at a couple of other countries to go into in next year. You know, long term, we'll obviously be looking to add on to that. But for next year, we think the 25 to 35 is sufficient. And frankly, I think it's important because we have these grumpy hedge funds invested in our company. I think it's important that we actually increase our open market stock repurchases and get some money back to the shareholders, because that's what they're looking for.
Lisa, to oversimplify a little bit, your strategic plan seems to suggest we're just going to continue what we've been doing and do just a little bit more of it next year. And the market seems to be looking at that saying, that ain't going to make it. The market is telling you in no uncertain terms, there's something wrong. We've heard nothing from you as to what the market has identified as what's wrong, nor have we heard about what you think can be done about it. What are the real risks to this business coming forward? I mean, it's all well and good to say we're going to go into a couple of more countries, but you've got to, in fact, address what the market is telling us, and that is whatever you're doing is not moving the needle.
So let's go into executive session. Let's pretend Lisa's not in the room. Let me make an observation or two, and then you guys tell me what you think. You know, in some ways, this hypothetical was selected because it's so unexciting. It's just the way the world is. How many board meetings have we all been to where last year's plan and this year's plan are largely the same plan?
Xerox.
How many meetings have we been to where there was no bold thinking, there was no new vision? I would submit, you know, and I go to 50 board meetings, 70 board meetings a year, that that's corporate America. That's the norm. It's the exception where you go in and the CEO says, we're going to go in a bold and new and different direction. This is not a broken company. It's not a company that's losing money. It's a company year over year does a little better each year. But is it doing all that it can do? And, you know, Lisa, for theatrical effect, you know, made a couple wisecracks about her expectation that you as a board would rubber stamp her budget and her capital plan. And the real question is not, in my view, what's the right plan? Okay, that's beside the point. The real question, and the hard question for directors, is how do you figure out how to have a non-defensive, open conversation that benefits the stockholders? And so let's put the hypothetical aside. I'd love to hear your experiences on kind of how you get through that kind of psychological divide that I submit exists between every board of directors and every CEO to varying degrees.
My thought is, can you please tell me, Lisa, what keeps you up at night? What do you worry about?
We're in executive session. She's not in the room.
No, let's bring her back. Okay. Do it any way you want to do it.
But you know, you've painted a rosy world where it's just going to be incremental.
So let's stop there. That's very clever, right? What Larry just did, what Norm just did. Instead of talking about what she wanted to talk about, he changed the focus of the conversation entirely, right? He asked an out-of-the-box, big-picture, high-level conversation that was intended to take her off of her script, okay, and get her to talk about something that stockholders really care about, which is, what are the big risks? What are the big challenges? Okay, that's very clever. Other ideas. What could you have done with Lisa differently, other than kind of the cross-examine technique? He changed the subject. He thought big. What else might you have done?
Yeah. Well, you could really make a radical strategic decision that if in fact you are a strong cash flow, low growth, why are we public? You know, if we need radical change to the company, let's go sell it to an LBO shop. This is a perfect LBO candidate, although the PE is high, but you know, we're talking Dunkin' Donuts, we're talking Burger King here. This probably is Burger King. You know, it did a public recap. It's paid down its debt. It's time to go sell it. And oh, by the way, the LBO shop will think big in terms of how to accelerate the growth in the places.
Again, in my view, very clever. Okay, so you changed the focus, but you changed it in a different way than Norm did. The way you changed the focus said, boy, what we're really all about here is trying to achieve the best value for our stockholders. Maybe against this boring strategic plan, we ought to consider a liquidity event for the company. It wasn't on the agenda for the board meeting today, but is it an appropriate thing for you to talk about? Absolutely. Is it the kind of thing you talk about maybe in executive session first? Absolutely. Larry.
The thing I see, both as a board member and as a consultant to boards, is the boards say, we have a full, frank, and free discussion, dot, 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 within the limits that we're given. And the strategy defines the limits. And so Lisa gave us a strategy, which is a sort of a full speed ahead, and then we're careening from A to C, as opposed to A to Z. And I'm reminded, when I was a kid, I used to go to Sears. And when I went to Sears, you were never given one option. They always said there's three options. There's a good option, there's a better option, and here's the best option. Which do you want? And I always thought, you know, that was a very good idea. And I try to do that with clients. I never said, this is it. I said, there's three, you know, there are multiple ways we could do this. There's this way, this way, this way. Which would you like? And that opened the discussion. If I was a board, I would be asking the CEO, don't present us with this one option. Give us three options. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a good, better, and best option, and let's have a full discussion. What I'm seeing is an A to C discussion as opposed to A to Z discussion. That's how she's framed the argument. And by the way, this is typical of what I see.
Stu, can I ask a question in general context? Modern boards now have lead directors, sometimes non-executive chairmen, sometimes lead directors.
Yes.
How much does, in your experience, do you see these lead directors sort of, you know, in sort of enhancing the board discussion, because they obviously had a preview of what was coming?
I'll answer your question, but I'm going to ask and answer a slightly different question first.
Okay.
I think, and I'm thinking of a concrete case right now, I think lead directors or board chairmen can be tremendously important in leading the dialogue between the CEO and the board as to strategic planning. I think a good lead director would have previewed this conversation ahead of time and would have forced Lisa to go bigger picture, to consider other options, to maybe present an A, B, and C alternative for the board to think about. I would have counseled her, had I been lead director, not to try to jam the approval, to let everything percolate. She needed coaching, absolutely, okay? You know, I've seen, you know, CEOs basically take the position that my board doesn't know enough about my business to engage meaningfully in the discussion of a strategic plan. And the board chair or the lead director's responsibility in that context is to say, no, you don't get it. That's their job. So if they don't know enough about the industry or about the competitive field to engage in a thoughtful conversation with you, that's your failing, okay? You need to find a way, either by doing a data dump on them, an educational program for them to be sufficiently informed so they can have that conversation in an informed fashion. So that's a long-winded way of saying, absolutely, lead directors can be immensely helpful in that context.
It's been my experience just that these days boards, when they get to the strategic plan, and they do day-long retreats so that they can cover A to Z in a discussive fashion and be educated. I mean,
absolutely right. You know, I think a lot of the misallocation of time in board meetings is the fault of lawyers, because you guys are spending way too much time in audit committee meetings, compensation committee meetings, governance meetings and the like, and an insufficient amount of time talking about business. And that's why the trend towards day-long retreats, you know, the fifth board meeting of each year has kind of occurred. It's the SEC's fault. And I'm not saying it's good or bad, but it's the reason that it's happened that way. Let's go to our second hypothetical because it's decidedly different. But before we do, the name of the first company is not Burger King,
close.
But close, Domino's. Real world. All right, now we're gonna tell you about widgets.com. Widgets.com is a leading services company with a suite of brands and widget offerings on the web. Among its product lines is Local Widget, which the company views as a specific area for growth. The company's chairman and CEO was a significant investor in Local Widget before it was acquired by the company. The company is in the midst of executing a multi-year strategic plan to reinvigorate its revenue growth and profitability by taking advantage of the continuing migration to the internet. The company's operating performance and stock price have declined over recent years. However, implementation of the strategic plan is starting to show some positive trends. A hedge fund stockholder, Norm Gorin, has sent a public letter to the board. Has sent a public letter to the board criticizing the company's strategy and nominating a short slate of directors. So let's say there are three up that year, they've proposed two. The stockholder also has questioned the company's executive compensation practices and the independence of and lack of significant stockholdings by the directors.
So after receiving the most recent letter from our dissident stockholder Norm, you've asked me to report to the board on my recommendations with respect to certain points in the stockholders' now publicized plan. So if you look at page 8 of your handout, I'd like to say first that the stockholders' plan is simplistic and I believe not well thought out. I'll discuss these points one by one. First, the dissident claims that our primary business unit is not being operated efficiently and that changes need to be made to make it profitable on a standalone basis. As you know, we're currently making progress under our existing strategic plan in terms of increasing both the profitability and operating performance. While I admit that the improvements have only been modest to date, I do not want to take a short-term action to pacify the dissident that will not be in the long-term interest of the company. As such, I recommend that we stay the course. The second point from the dissident is that his claim that because Local Widget has been losing money, it's not a viable business option. They would like for us to explore selling, joint venturing, restructuring, or shutting down this business. As you all know, I've been a champion of Local Widget for a long time. I believe that there is considerable and growing opportunity for this product. We've worked out many of the issues with the product, and now is not the time to abandon ship. Let me be clear. If the board were to decide to get rid of Local Widget, I would view it as a loss of confidence in my leadership, and I would need to consider my options.
Whoa.
Next, the dissident wants the company to publicly commit to specific operating targets and to tie executive compensation strictly to these targets. While I do think that we can provide some limited guidance and range, we need to be careful not to box ourselves in. We also should not be so rigid regarding our bonus plan and other compensation programs. Given the current turmoil in the business, I'm worried about employee attrition, employees getting distracted from executing our plan. Finally, the dissident has nominated three nominees to our eight-person board, or two nominees to our eight-person board. Our advisors have indicated that we might be able to settle the proxy contest if we give the dissident a seat on the board. I am strongly against any settlement with a dissident if it would include board seats. It will be disruptive to the company and execution of our strategic plan to have any of the dissident nominees in the boardroom. As you know, the dissident has made assertions about your independence and criticized your lack of stockholdings. We're all targets.
First reaction is executive session and fire the CEO.
All right, we're now in executive session. Please expand. If you don't do it my way, I'm out the door.
I think so.
Yeah.
I've been in that situation, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
That means there's no room for discussion. There has to be discussion.
Mm-hmm. Other thoughts? You guys think we ought to make a deal with the dissident and end the proxy contest, or do you think we ought to fight to
the... I think we ought to do this thing first.
I see.
I think when you do that thing first, you could probably have a different conversation with the dissident.
What if you thought that Lisa got her dander up, but that she really is the best CEO for the company?
And her strategy is correct.
And let's presume, for sake of discussion, that you believe in her strategy, okay? And look, we're all offended by her, you know, setting up the line, but let's just make it a little harder, because I think we all react the way you react. If her strategy's right and she's the right one to execute it, how do you deal with a situation like this? Yeah.
What if you said, Lisa, we can see that you're highly committed, you've given it your all, you've been a team player all along, I hear and sense your emotion and commitment to where you stand. What do you think we need to do to reach a happy medium or to compromise? Is there room for compromise? Ask her.
So,
am I back in?
Yeah, you're back in the room.
I was outside and I heard these like people talking about me maybe getting fired, so I was on the phone with my personal attorney making sure my package wasn't there. Okay. So,
And Lisa was the wrong personal attorney.
Goodman Proctor, I assume.
Yeah, exactly. Top notch.
No, they're the company's counsel.
Hey, we never saw a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
We didn't find our way by. Yeah.
I think what I would say to your question is that if we want to do what's in the best interest of stockholders, we all agreed, you know, 18 months or so ago, that this was the best long-term strategy for the stockholders. And while I'm certainly open to making course corrections to the extent that we're finding we need to do that along the way, I don't think that just because we have somebody who's knocking at our door, that it's in the best interest of the stockholders to divert us from the plan that we've decided is in the best interest of the shareholders.
So Lisa, do you think we should meet with the dissident? Do you think we should invite Norm in and you know, with you and a couple of the directors there, have a conversation with him, hear him out, see if we can't kind of persuade him that we have the right business vision and maybe find some compromise on the board seat? Maybe we sit one of his two directors. Do you think that's something that we should do or no?
I'd be happy to talk to Norm. I don't know that we need to get others in the board involved. They're very busy and whatnot. But I do think it would be helpful.
So George, you're the non-executive chairman of this board, or the lead director. Do you think when we have our meeting with Norm, we should have directors present, or we ought to let Lisa do it on her own?
Absolutely have directors present, no question about it. And there's obviously a conflict between the two. And it would be contentious at best if there weren't other parties in the room.
Okay, so let's do that. George and Lisa, you're meeting with Norm. Let's have a conversation. Norm, what's your perspective about why things need to change at the company? The chairman of the board would like to hear your views.
Just clearly, the company's strategy is not working. It's underperforming its competitors. And something fundamental is wrong here, and it needs to be addressed.
All right. Can we get into some of the specifics where you think we're underperforming some of the competitors so that we can perhaps get into a little bit more of a dialogue with Lisa and understand from the company's perspective what the dynamic might be?
Here's a sort of at a loss.
I realize that
is the point of contention. The data said it's losing money and it's not viable. The CEO obviously is the champion of Local Widget and having come from Local Widget when it was acquired.
So maybe, Norm, what's happening here is it's short term versus long term. Okay, we recognize that in the short term, Local Widget's losing money. We all also recognize the extreme dislocation in the technology business and the communication business caused by the internet. We believe, the board believes, that there's a great opportunity for this company to be part of the new era. The question is whether you and the other stockholders have the patience to allow us to realize it. We think the company would be making a huge mistake if it abandoned ship as we're about to turn the corner. So, you know, maybe what we have here is just a difference in time perspective. And look, you're a big holder of the company. We work for you. The directors work for you. The management works indirectly for you. We would welcome you to the board, okay? So if you would consider joining our board, we would consider ending all of this and nominating you directly to join our board. We'd ask that for now, you come on our board by yourself. Your other nominee, we're happy to consider in the ordinary course when we next have a vacancy on our board, and you make your own judgment over the next year. We want you in the room with us. Does that have any appeal?
Absolutely.
Okay. So let's go to hypothetical three in the few minutes that we have remaining. I'm sorry, you have a question?
Yeah, I think the issue that was brought up before is probably a reality. Having Norm on the board is not the solution. The solution is the initial solution that was recommended, which shouldn't come as a surprise to the board. The board, because if the CEO's mentality and mindset is as perceived, it's not anything that just happened like that. I think that's got to be the first issue.
I can't disagree, and I think you know, Charles' observation in our first hypothetical was appropriate. If George had been doing his job here as non-executive chairman, he would have had a coaching session with Lisa before she ever laid down the line that you guys are reacting that way. I'd say, Lisa, you don't really feel that way, okay? Look, this is hard. Norm's our biggest stockholder. We work for him. We have to find a way to communicate better with him. Now, maybe it means we put him on the board. Maybe it means we need to explain our business better externally. Let's talk about how we do that. And had George had that coaching session with Lisa before she laid down the line with you, maybe we would have had a very different conversation.
It's interesting that, you know, 20 years ago when Carl Icahn surfaced in the company, you know, people green-mailed him out. They didn't want to deal with him. But slowly but surely, he got either bought the company like TWA, or these days, they're inviting him on the board. And the funny thing is, by co-opting him, he is both a change agent within the boardroom, which is good, because sometimes boards need that, but he's also patient enough to work out to the proper end game. I mean, I think back in the early 80s when Gold and Disney did the boardroom coup at Disney. Disney had been underperforming for 25 years, ever since Walt died. And it just had a series of CEOs that just were worthless.
Yeah, let me make this comment about proxy contests, because Lisa and I are involved in too many of them. And each year we're involved in more and more. You know, one of the greatest challenges of the hedge fund community and the activist world and the proxy contest world is for boards to stop looking at it as black hats and white hats. It's not that, okay? There are stockholders, there are directors, and there are managers, and they all have different roles. And there's a propensity on the part of boards, particularly in small cap companies, to think of, we're the good guys, and the stockholders who are looking for change are the bad guys. That might be right, that might be wrong, but it's a overgeneralized characterization. And we spend a lot of our time in these proxy contest situations, in these dissident situations, trying to get the board to calm down, relax, listen to what the dissident's saying. Maybe some of it is actually interesting. Thinking about how to win these proxy contests, but to try to find a win-win for these proxy contests. Because the truth is that the way ISS lines up its recommendations presently, you generally are going to lose proxy contests. The incumbents generally lose proxy contests. So, you know, it's a whole new world for public company America, and it's very hard to teach people who kind of grew up in the business before the dissident world became so active to think of the world as the glass is half full rather than half empty.
Probably would have helped to ask the dissident to back up to the point where he first made the investment and what were the attributes that enticed him to make the
investment. Anybody want to guess which company this was?
It was AOL, and they fought the dissident in the proxy contest, and they won. So they stayed the course with the plan and backed the CEO.
And then they failed.
That's the point, right? So they won, but did they win? They lost the war, right? Because in winning, they destroyed stockholder value.
How do you know, though, that Norm is a real entrepreneur and all he's really looking for is a quick flip?
Yeah, I'm with you. That's what I think he was. I think he was in it for the short term. He was looking for a quick flip. He didn't have the long-term interest of the shareholders.
And you can take his flat because it costs a lot of money to have a proxy.
Yes.
Well, I've known Norm for 25 years. You're absolutely
Our third and last hypothetical. Championship Widgets is a leading provider of widgets and related services to individual consumers and commercial businesses. Its operations are organized in several segments, including the Patriots, the Bruins, and the Red Sox Services Group. Among the company's product is a new widget on the go offering, designed to compete with the hottest new widgets in the market. The company recently appointed a new CEO. The company is facing intense competition in all areas of its business, including among major corporations with long-established positions. The company has been criticizing for making only modest incremental investments in its products, and it has had several challenging quarters from an earning perspective. The Widget on the Go initiative has not met internal milestones and financial targets, nor has the product been well received in the marketplace. Morale is low. Lisa, tell us about your plan for this company.
So since my appointment as CEO, I've been conducting an in-depth analysis of the company's strategy and operations. My conclusion is that the company is a burning platform. It's time for a major shift in our strategic direction. I firmly believe that I'm the one to lead the company during this transition, but not without your support. As a first step, we need to prioritize those categories of products and services with higher value and margin growth. In particular, we need to invest in our Bruins widget group and focus on our service offerings, which have higher margins. We're trying to do too much, and thus with our attention focused on the Bruins, and the Sox Services Group, I recommend that over the next 12 to 18 months, we consider the spin-off or divestiture of our Patriots Widget Group. We should strongly consider announcing this exploration of strategic alternatives to the public, as I believe the market will react positively. I'm also proposing an acquisition strategy in which we would pursue the acquisition of one or more companies that complement our existing product and service offerings or provide access to new markets. In this regard, I'd like to present a specific acquisition to the board at this meeting. I've identified a target company, Celtics Pride, that I believe is a perfect complement to our core portfolio. The acquisition will be accretive to earnings in the first full year following the closing. The acquisition will require the use of a significant portion of our available cash, but the other strategic initiatives that I'm proposing should result in adequate future cash flow to fund near-term investments. Finally, it's time to kill our Widget on the Go initiative. Based on market response, we would be throwing good money after bad if we continue this program, and we could use the cost savings to fund other R&D projects. While we will incur significant restructuring charges, we can smooth these out in our earnings releases through the use of non-GAAP financial measures. With a potential spin-off of the Patriots and the discontinuation of Widget on the Go, we'll need to make sure we're retaining and incentivizing the key employees that we need to execute these plans. However, I believe that my overall strategic vision will energize our company and our various constituencies, including our employees, shareholders, customers, and partners. Are you with me?
So this is the antithesis of Domino's, right? In the Domino's case, we had a CEO who was steady as we go, didn't want to make any changes. You've hired a new CEO, and in your first meeting with her, if I heard it all correctly, she has proposed that you spin off a major business unit of the company,
mm-hmm.
that you close a major business unit of the company, mm-hmm. and that you do a transformative acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
This is her first meeting. She has three mega proposals on the table. How do you put aside the question of whether her proposals are right or wrong? How do you deal psychologically, emotionally, from a process perspective, with an agenda this fulsome from a new CEO?
I just heard the CEO advocate non-GAAP in a publicly traded company. And we've all heard of Sox, and I don't mean the ones that I'm wearing. And I worked for Arthur Anderson for 10 years, and I was there the day the doors were closed. So I don't like what she said.
So you have an integrity issue with our CEO right from the get-go.
Sure, there's 84,000 people unemployed after 78 years. I would say that's a very high risk.
Absolutely. Other thoughts?
I just make the observation that a new CEO just doesn't walk in with no expectations as to what they're going to say or do. I mean, they've gone through a great deal of vetting. They've got a pedigree. They've got a track record. There's been, you know, the board has had some discussions about, okay, what are we looking for? They've gone through that. So it really cannot be a surprise to the board that the person that they just brought in is proposing something.
Yeah.
I can't imagine a new CEO would propose those kind of things unless they knew full well that that was expected based on the process by which she acceded to the
position. The leadership transformation had a process already in place, and you didn't give us the background on that.
Yeah.
Was the last CEO forced out was, You went outside the company because clearly you were looking for somebody to come in and be a change agent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay? And boom.
So she's kind of done what you asked her to do. You asked her that you wanted a change agent, you got a change agent, but my goodness, she's asking for, you know, all kinds of mega changes, and she's asking you to announce things tomorrow. So what might you do as a process matter in order to allow you as a board to do your proper diligence? What are some of the suggestions?
Well, first question is have you had conversations with Celtic Pride? I mean, is the buy side, what you want to do is sell and buy. Okay, you said sell in 12 to 18 months. Why aren't we selling tomorrow? Okay, B, on the buy side, is that property available?
Oh yeah, it's being auctioned. We have to jump quickly.
Oh, I see.
We don't have a lot of time to talk about that one. If I don't jump on that one today, it's gonna, we're gonna lose it.
So you've hired your bankers and your lawyers and you started down the due diligence process here.
You
betcha.
We
have competition.
We got competition.
Okay.
Speak now or forever hold your peace. You guys asked me to come in and change the company. I found for you just the company you should buy.
It's a process comment, and that is, if the president is coming in and just laying this on a board and surprising us, then I don't get warm fuzzies about that. My assumption is, if we were smart enough to hire a good CEO, if it's a public company, we have between 5 and 7 people on this board. She's already privately
called everybody
individually in some sort of rank order based on their real importance, and she's already lined up the votes. And by the time the formal meeting is done, she knows how the votes are going to occur. Otherwise, she wouldn't be proposing this. If she hasn't done that, I am concerned.
Yeah,
but my assumption is she's done.
See, you had to manage your board, and that means you call them privately, tell them what you're thinking, and hear them out before you ever get into the boardroom.
You know, hindsight's 20/20, and we're going to tell you in 2 or 3 minutes who this company was. But my observation about this hypothetical is that the failure here was a failure of process more than that of substance. So might the board have kind of said, okay, let's take these one at a time, beginning with the one that is the most time sensitive, okay? And from the look of it, it looks like Celtic Pride is the most time sensitive because we have competition, it's a buy-side deal. We don't have to make the spin-off decision today. We don't have to make the discontinuation.
Well, unless you got financial constraints in order to buy Celtic Pride.
We don't have to make the discontinuation of the other business today. Maybe we have financial constraints, maybe we don't have financial constraints. But I think as a process matter, what I would have recommended in a situation such as this is, let's do them one at a time, let's isolate them, and let's try to get some third party indication of reality here. Let's not just take our management, with all due respect, let's not just take our management's word for it. So you might, for example, say, gee, with regard to Celtic Pride, I know you're anxious to hire it. Do we have a banker on that deal? Have we had a consultant come in and look at the future of that industry? What kind of projections do you have of that business going forward? What are the big challenges facing that business? Okay, and push hard on one of the three, seeking third-party help. Okay, have we audited the company? Have we sent somebody in and done due diligence? Where is the due diligence report? Okay. You know, my own experience is that when a CEO comes to you with a crisis and says something needs to be done tomorrow, we lose that opportunity, the best judgment that a director does is say, whoa. It's far better that we miss the opportunity than that we go too fast and make a big mistake. So let's slow down. Lisa, if we lose it, we lose it. What are the 5 or 10 things we need to do as a board to assure ourselves that this is a good decision for us? Let's make a list. Let's get some third parties in here to talk to the board directly about the value proposition. So Lisa, we're past 6 o'clock. What's the name of this company and what is the denouement of the story?
So the board approved the plan. It was announced as part of an earnings release, these various actions that the company was going to take. The market was not enchanted with the plan. I got fired shortly thereafter, and the company's HP.
Is what?
HP.
Hewlett Packard.
Oh, company, they grossly overpaid.
Right.
Yeah.
And the target company here, Celtic Pride, is Autonomy, which was the subject of accounting fraud and all kinds of other problems, because diligence was not properly done. There was no third party kind of assessment of value, and the board basically felt as if they hired a new CEO to be a change agent. The CEO came in with a plan. The board felt it had to back that plan, and the board destroyed billions of dollars of stockholder value. So we're past 6 o'clock. Thank you very much.
Megan's trying to pick up the pieces.
I've lost three jobs so far today. It's a new record.
Well, Hewlett Packard is a source of unending boredom.
Well, now they've got this great debate because there's one director who the shareholders want to get rid of more than anybody else, and he won't resign.
Right, right. Or he just stepped down from lead director to regular director.
Right, but he won't get off the board. The shareholders have basically voted, you should be off the board.
Thank you, Stu. Thank you, Lisa. In a few days, this will be on the web, and you can listen to it and share it with others. So thank you very much for coming. Stu has got a plane to catch, but please continue to stay and schmooze, and thank you for coming to seat at the table.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
I remember your show 2 years ago on the M&As. That was great.
Yep. By the way, the program that Stu did was called When is a Deal? Or When is a Deal Not a Deal? But it's a very similar issue. He presented a case of a board approving a deal, and then another opportunity comes. And you can go to our website, boardoptions.com, and look for that. It's very good. Thank you very much. That was great. Stu, thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
Do you like getting fired every time you do this show?
Multiple times.